I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This is Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
Coming at ya!
Brady under center, victory formation, takes the snap, balls to an E, and that'll do it. The New England Patriots have won the Patriots, their second Super Bowl championship in the last 3 years. And they have tied an NFL record, tied the Pittsburgh Steelers with 6 Super Bowl championships. Belichick will win his 6th Super Bowl as the head coach. Number one, as the confetti flies, the colors are silver, blue, and red. The Patriots have won Super Bowl 53.
6 weeks ago, no one thought we'd be doing this except us. And we just kept fighting. Football is an amazing sport. It challenges so many parts of you, physical, mental toughness, and we sure had a lot of mental toughness. Wish we could have scored a few more points tonight, which we had our opportunities, but we won the game, and I'm just so happy. And I got my son Jack here, my little angel right here, and it couldn't be a better night.
All right, back here, hour two of the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEEI, the New England Patriots, for the 6th time since the year 2001, have won the Super Bowl. So let me just say, I was so proud. We opened the show a little bit with this. I was so proud of the defensive effort in an era of offensive football. To watch the Patriots play that level of defense and to win the Super Bowl that way was just beautiful. It was a beautiful exhibition of just defensive prowess and game planning and grit and everything that I wished the Patriots were since really 2000 and, I don't know, 7-10 when we started to see them as an offensive juggernaut. We're going to just unpack all of our thoughts from the Super Bowl. Number one, I'm going to say this. That was a masterful performance, as I just outlined, by Bill Belichick's defense. Belichick.
Got to give Brian Flores all the credit.
Not all the credit, but a ton of the credit. And by the way, did you see Flores on the sideline during the game? They kept showing. I mean, what a man on a mission. Just hiding behind that play calling sheet. You could see it in his eyes. He was out for blood, and I loved every second of it. It was a masterful performance by the Patriots defense, but do not try to convince me that that was better than what we saw in the Super Bowl in January of 2002 versus the first Rams team.
The greatest show on turf.
Don't tell me that what we saw in this Super Bowl was better than that Super Bowl 36 against that first Rams team. Because
It's close.
It can be close. It wasn't better.
It's close, and I'll explain why. You could do different things defensively in 2001, 2002 than you could today. You could play a lot more physical as a cornerback than you could today. So it was easier to play defense then than it is now.
Okay, fair point.
And you shut down an incredibly high-flying offense without being able to do what your bread and butter was back then, which was to out-physical you.
And I believe that offense ranks 11th all-time in terms of yards, was it? I'll have to double-check that stat. Yes, it was a very good offense. You shut down in an era of offensive football, but I'm still not buying it.
I do agree with you, simply because when you look at it, you go, they had Kurt Warner. Obviously, you take Kurt Warner over Jared Goff.
Yeah.
They had a healthy Marshall Faulk,
yep,
as opposed to a maybe hurt Todd Gurley, an ineffective Todd Gurley. I'll take Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt over any wide receiver on the Rams. So, yeah, you had, I think that Rams team was clearly a much better team than the current Rams team. But defensively, you could do a hell of a lot more until Bill Polian started to whine, cry, and complain.
Correct.
And get the rules changed.
And you did it on turf.
And you had more talented players.
You did. But you shut them down on turf. Their bread and butter.
Their bread and butter.
They had two MVPs, as you said, with Faulk and Warner and all those other guys. It's close. Don't get me wrong. This was masterful. Masterful. But it was not quite 2001. Fine. That's one thing.
The one thing, though, about the defense, though, with what Flores had them do this year, which was outstanding, and then you look back at previous years and go, I thought Matt Patricia was the defensive genius. I thought Matt Patricia was this defensive guru, the next brilliant defensive mind in the NFL. Flores does in 1 year what Patricia could never do in years.
Let me ask you something. I'm going to give you my theory, and you can react to it. I think, and this is just a theory, I think, though, this whole situation where the Patriots began to listen to the media, listen to the haters, the rabbit ears, I think there was a point in this season, and again, this is just a theory, mm-hmm. where Bill Belichick stepped in and started to really push and pump some of this sound into the players. I think Bill Belichick spearheaded this movement, or whatever you want to call it, of the Patriots hearing the noise and listening to the haters and feeding off of it and reacting to it and talking about it publicly. I think Bill Belichick was at the center of that, because this organization has done things one way over the course of 18 years or whatever it is. And it's never been to acknowledge publicly that the hate, not collectively like they did during this run, where the haters are out there and everybody's against us, hashtag bet against us, making t-shirts, Brady's videos, Edelman, Van Noy, firing back, tweeting at people. That never happened. And Twitter's been around. These other people have been talking down about the Patriots for years. It wasn't just this year.
Yeah, but
years.
Bill's always done this. Bill's always had that billboard material.
I know he's always done this, but I think Bill not only threw up billboard material, I think he gave them the okay to do what you need to do. If you need to throw it in somebody's face, do it. I think he gave the okay. That's just a theory. I don't know. This was a different tape. We've never seen them act this way, and it benefited them. So if that's what happened, I give him credit. Something it feels like changed, though, because they all of a sudden were on the attack. Vicious. Everybody. Anybody and everybody on that team that could consume some kind of content going against them, they attacked. They couldn't wait to throw it back in somebody's face, whether it was on social media or in an interview or on the stage after the Super Bowl, Bill. Nobody thought we could do this. This was a change in culture. He changed what they usually would do. That was never – we ignore the noise. They never brought that stuff up.
Don't you love the revisionist history where everyone after the season, they're criticizing the Patriots for doing exactly what you're talking about in terms of they were listening. We never didn't believe in you. Bull crap. No one believed them after they lose to Miami and then next week lose to the Steelers.
Yeah.
Especially what the Chiefs are doing, and the Chargers are coming up strong, and then you've got the Saints in the NFC who are wagging. You have the Rams who are an absolute wagon in the NFC. No, stop it.
Yeah, that was a stupid argument because you can be just because the bar has been set so high for the Patriots doesn't mean you can't have people that don't believe in you. I guess what they think is a lot higher still than what you think this bad team could do. You know, the Cardinals. But you could still say that there were doubters. I mean, they're on the record. There was a million doubters out there. We have all the sound and audio because the Patriots Twitter account tweeted it out. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It was a complete change from top to bottom. Owners, coaches, players talking about what was out there and who was talking down about the team and doubting the team. I've never seen anything like it. I loved every second. And I think it worked. I think they fed off the motive. I mean, it worked. It worked. All these people that said they couldn't do it, it worked. I think they were given the green light to do whatever they wanted to do in terms of, and if Bill Belichick did do that, I give him credit. That's evolving. That's changing. That's reading your team. And it liberated them.
It wouldn't surprise me if he did do that simply because it's really not out of norm for him to kind of highlight the negativity surrounding the team towards the players.
Right,
and saying,
but he let them take it and run with it. I feel like that's never happened before.
Maybe. I mean, like I said, you can talk to Christian Fourier. He'll tell you about billboard material, stuff that's put up right there. Tells you you're not good. You guys can't do this. You're not good enough. Look what these people are saying about you. He's always done it. So if he kind of just loosened it a little bit
but
more.
But the Patriots Twitter account jumping in on the fun and tweeting out media members talking about the team. I feel like that comes from within. That is Bill completely giving the green light that this is going to be okay.
Maybe.
I mean, it's just so different. I can't believe all of the things. It's just people have hated on the Patriots before. I remember the rhetoric a few years ago, but when they beat the Falcons, their schedule wasn't hard enough.
We get that crap every year.
So, I mean, it's just there's always – I mean, people every year have doubted the Patriots. They just started listening.
The AFC East sucks, yeah. But you still got to win in the playoffs.
Yeah, every year they've doubted the Patriots. Now they just start listening. Oh, my God, there's actually – hold on. There's a radio show that talks about our team every day? There's TV programs that are talking about us, that's not a new thing. It's just, it feels like something changed within that build, within the walls there, where Bill said, hey, this is okay. You can do this. If you want to clap back, clap back. Whatever you need to do, you have free reign. Whatever's going to motivate you. Or maybe he just did it. Maybe he didn't have to tell them that, but he forced it on them so much. Maybe they felt like they had the green light because of how much Bill forced it on them. I don't know. Something changed. We've never seen that kind of public reaction to the haters. And it was great. I loved every second of it.
Well, it's good leadership. It's a rallying call for the team. It helps focus their energy outwards instead of inwards sometimes, in terms of, look at what all these people are saying about you. Forget about the internal issues with the team right now. Forget about maybe you don't have complete trust in me or the guy lining up next to you. Look at what all these jerk-offs are saying about you. These guys that don't know a damn thing about this sport that I coach and you play. Look what they're saying about you. Shove it down their throat.
Yeah, that's fine. If he did that, that's fine. Congratulations. Well done.
The negativity will always be there surrounding this team. I mean, you saw it immediately after the Super Bowl. Immediately after the Super Bowl ended and Julian Edelman was named Super Bowl MVP, the negativity ramps up right again. And this time, those silly little baseball writers getting involved and acting like the biggest hypocrites in sports. Again, Julian Edelman, you know, in our sport, he would have been suspended for 60 games and wouldn't have been able to play in the playoffs. That's because you jackasses ruined your own sport. You propped up all the steroid guys for years, and then when the fans started looking and going, I don't like this, you guys started to turn and become anti-steroid guys. You guys were eating it all up. All of these guys, John Heyman, you fraud hypocrite, you guys were all loving what Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa were doing. All of you. You couldn't wait to write articles about it. They had more people around their lockers to grab sound bites than at any other point.
Yeah.
And they all lapped it up. Lapped it up. And then you want to pretend as if baseball and football are the same thing? It's not even close. They get mad because fans of football, which most of them are probably still fans of baseball too, that we look at it differently, that we have different standards for different athletes, that we're more forgiving when athletes run into each other at 22 miles an hour with head first and say, I'm a little more forgiving if this guy who's getting crushed every single weekend by a 300-pound man, take something to feel a little bit better so he can get back on the field versus a guy that wants to hit the ball 10 feet further.
And I think that's just it right there. That is my take on this, whatever you want to call it. These people are the ones with the hairy feet that are just angry, and I have no time for. I think you just said it right there. In football, steroids, performance-enhancing drugs, is about recovery.
Yep.
In baseball, it's about recovery, but it also helps you. Your talent is enhanced.
In baseball, it's more about money. It's more about money than it is in football. And
what do you mean money? Like, because you play better, you make more money?
Because in stats mean so much more.
That's what I'm saying.
In baseball, so if you hit a couple extra home runs, you just added a couple $1 million to your paycheck for next year.
Well, but for example, though, 2003 ALCS Game 7.
Yeah.
Jason Giambi hits two home runs. You know, he's on the juice. That might have resulted in those home runs, the fact that he was on steroids. So that could have impacted the game. The fact that Julian Edelman might have taken something back in August or July when he was trying to recover from a torn ACL, that didn't affect.
I wouldn't say might. I believe he did.
Okay, he did.
I 100% believe he did.
He did. But that doesn't affect how the game in the Super Bowl is played.
He served the punishment that the league has said, this is what the punishment is
right.
For this. It's four games.
That's right. These people have nothing to stand on. I'm just telling you.
Now, if your argument, if you simply went into it and said, I'm surprised a guy who got suspended for PEDs this year won the Super Bowl MVP because it looks as if it says, you'll lose four games and you will lose consideration for postseason awards. As in MVP, Pro Bowl, All-Pro, all that kind of stuff. You lose that consideration. You cannot be voted for. If you said it's a little weird that you kind of are going against your own rule here, I'm with you. That is kind of weird. Maybe you shouldn't have been because of that, because in the rule in place it says you're disqualified from postseason awards. Sure. Then you give it to someone else. No big deal. Whatever. But to pretend as if football is this big PED problem and you're burying your head in the sand about baseball, it's insane. We've seen stars, and it's not even going back to 1998. We've seen stars in the last couple of years get popped. Robinson Cano, what's his name out in Milwaukee?
Braun.
Ryan Braun. Yeah. We've seen superstars getting popped for this left and right. Now, if you want to criticize football, there's plenty to criticize them for in terms of their drug testing.
Yeah, I just don't think in football it really helps you play the game better. I think it helps you recover. It gets you available. Maybe it makes you, but I feel like it's about recovery.
I don't think it makes you a better wide receiver. Right. It might make you a better linebacker because you're bigger and stronger, or lineman. But I don't know how it helps you. I've never taken steroids, so I don't know.
Right? It doesn't. We don't know. But it doesn't feel in baseball. You turn a guy who would hit 20 home runs into a guy that hits 45. That's a huge difference.
You turn a guy who's hits 12 home runs a year average, and he turns into a 50 home run guy, and his name's Brady Anderson.
Brady Anderson.
You completely change the fabric of the sport in baseball.
That's not what football is.
No.
So I don't really care. These people need to go hide in Florida and wait for spring training so you can report on a bunch of crap that we don't care about.
Go keep pretending like your sport is as popular as it used to be because it's not. It's not even close anymore.
No.
It's not even close. It's not second in this country. It is not second in this country. Basketball has eclipsed it.
And you know what else has really hurt Major League Baseball? And this isn't breaking news, but I thought about this the other day. What their free agent period is like is such an embarrassment. The free agency in the NBA, it's the most exciting time in the league. Mm-hmm. It's better than the finals most of the time. Baseball, it's an afterthought. They're not even signing until spring training. I mean, the best player, arguably, in the league, he's not the best player. One of the best players in the league, one of the best, a free agent. Can you imagine if—
Two of the 10 best players in the league, potentially.
This would be like— Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard being free agents and nobody's really discussing it. I mean, that's just unheard of. Now, the singular player affects basketball more than a baseball game.
A hell of a lot
but
more.
Still, these are the best players in the league and nobody's even talking about it. There's no urgency to do anything, no hype at all. That's horrible for the sport. The NBA and their player movement scenarios, that is the most popular, most exciting time in the league, Kyrie. Why are Kevin Durant going on rants? Why is everyone interested in what you're doing and that's all they care about? Because that's what wins the championship.
Well, that singular, like you said, that singular player in the NBA means a hell of a lot more than that singular player in baseball does. I would never pay these guys $300 million a year. Let me look at the stars in baseball. When you built a team around this one singular star and you pay him an overwhelming amount of money and you feel like I can't pay as much, look at those stars. Did they win? How many rings did Barry Bonds get?
That would be zero.
How many rings did Ken Griffey Jr. get?
Zero.
How many rings when he was the highest paid player in baseball in Texas get? Alex Rodriguez. Oh,
negative.
No, they were the worst team in baseball.
Last place. But I said it. I mean, yes, they don't make as big of an impact as the best basketball player in the NBA. But that's not to say there can't be a little bit more buzz associated with the free agent period in Major League Baseball. I mean, that would help the sport if there was more buzz.
It would be a million times better for baseball if you put a salary cap in place because you wouldn't have this problem where these guys are trying to get contracts that are so insane compared to the rest of the players in the league when you are not that much better. You are not 300 million times better than this other guy on your team.
If you're talking about baseball used to be more popular, right? It used to be.
Yeah.
Okay. When Alex Rodriguez went from Texas to New York, when did he sign? When Curt Schilling came
December,
to Boston.
December, I believe, right?
When did Curt Schilling sign?
November.
It was like Thanksgiving.
It was right after Thanksgiving, and I believe A-Rod's was right before Christmas.
Okay, so all I'm saying is it felt like then there was a little bit more hype to the offseason. Now, like you said, they waited for these contracts.
A-Rod might have been January, because I'm getting it confused, because remember there was the almost trade with the Red Sox.
I'm
not sure, but it wasn't this late. It wasn't what happened with JD Martinez last year.
There's just no hype associated with it. It's an afterthought, and that's an opportunity for the sport to create a little buzz. I mean, that's the most exciting part, arguably, of the basketball calendar, July 1st. That's when the Warriors became a dynasty, when they signed Kevin Durant. The rest was just a formality. When they went through those four games against the Cavs, we knew what was going to happen. When they signed him, championships were won.
Listen, that day. I have no problem with players trying to get as much money as humanly possible. We all should try and get as much money as humanly possible. But you also have to have the realization, am I pricing myself out? I'm not going to get close to this. Mm-hmm. Why am I putting this price so high? No one's going to pay me that.
All right. We'll go back to the Super Bowl when we get back and more Celtics.
And are you going to pay Manny Machado when the last image you saw of him is falling down to his knee to lose the World Series?
Talk about culture. This is the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEEI.
Got something you want to share with Mark and Ben? Give them a call at 401-737-1287 on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
He just said he was proud of me. That was big. He's been an unbelievable guy to learn from. As a football player, as a professional, as a family man, the guy's all in. And that trickles down when you see leaders of your team do that, and it shows guys like when I was a young guy. Hey, he's Tom Brady. He's bringing in a quarterback coach still, and he's a three-time Super Bowl winning champion at the time, and still putting in the hours. And that can be said the same with our coach. I remember going in and seeing Coach. I don't know if he remembers this, but I was a rookie, and it was like 11 o'clock at night. And by the grace of God, we were walking out at the same time. And I probably said maybe three words to him at the time. Before that, I was on the team for like 6 months. And I just looked at him because I saw him on the treadmill, watching film at 10 o'clock at night. I go, Coach, you sure like football, huh? He goes, it beats being a plumber. See you tomorrow.
It's a great story. Bill Belichick, by the way, for the record, did refute that he said that about plumbers. But I don't really buy that because he kills meteorologists all the time. Regardless, so I'm just thinking, I'm listening to Julian Edelman there talk about Tom Brady, and it's, how important is the leadership of the best player, Kyrie Irving? It's just so night and day what Tom Brady has done there, and that's a separate conversation because we're going to talk about Edelman here. But what Tom Brady has done there from a leadership perspective cannot be overstated. Forget about the fourth quarter comebacks and how good he is reading the blitz and finding the guy in zone and all that on the field. What he has done with the culture of that team has been so enormous for this run, for the six championships, for the dynasty. It cannot be overstated, and we are seeing it right now all across sports, but with the Celtics, we're seeing it with Kyrie everywhere. When your best player isn't the elite leader, or worse, is an issue, you just have kinds of problems that you don't want to have, and the Celtics are dealing with that right now. But let's get back to Edelman because he was a Super Bowl MVP. First question for me, should he have been the Super Bowl MVP?
There was a bunch of guys that you could have picked out as a Super Bowl MVP, and he was uncoverable. I mean, he was really the only reason.
Was he your Super Bowl MVP?
I probably would have gone with Gilmore. I think Gilmore would have been the MVP slightly over him because the defensive performance was so dominant.
Yeah.
And what he did was he just shut him down. Absolutely shut him down. They couldn't do anything. So I might have gone with him. He didn't have the sexy enough stats to maybe warrant it for some people.
Real quick, I'll say that. I'm with you with Gilmore. I loved his game. If remember he punched out the ball in that one, that in the second? If Hightower recovers that, mm-hmm. I bet you he's the MVP.
Absolutely.
Because that's another thing to add to the stat sheet.
I don't know which offensive lineman you could say got himself into that category because they all played very well. But then even when you look at it and go, when you look at the totality of that game and go, who really had a great impact on what happened throughout this game? You have to look at Ryan Allen and Matthew Slater as doing a great job. Ryan Allen in terms of field position, Matthew Slater in terms of getting down there and killing the ball. They were great. They had as big an impact as anyone on that team did in that game. They absolutely did. It's a punter, so I don't know if I'm going to would ever give a punter any kind of award, but if it's not Edelman, to me, it's Gilmore.
I don't have a problem with Julian Edelman getting the award. Would I have given it to him? I could have probably made an argument for a defensive guy. I would have felt more comfortable if Stephon Gilmore won it. But look, what he did in that game was huge. Keeping the Rams off the field, first downs, leading to field goals. I mean, he made a catch on the touchdown drive. It was a huge game, and there were stretches, like you said, of that game where he was uncoverable. He was the best Patriots offensive player in a game where offense was at a severe premium. So I don't have a problem with him getting the award. It certainly shouldn't have been Brady. Probably should have been a defensive player, but the stats, it's tough. I don't have a problem with the Gilmore thing. With the Edelman thing. Now, after that game and putting his body of work all up on the table, how he's performed in the Super Bowls he's played in and how he's performed overall in the postseason and throughout his career, the conversation was brought up this week, should Julian Edelman get Hall of Fame consideration? To that, you say what?
Consideration? 100%.
Well, there's plenty of people saying he shouldn't even be considered, not even close.
Yeah, they're wrong. Because it's not the Pro Wide Receiver Hall of Fame. It's the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So if you want to go look at all the Hall of Fame wide receivers, the guys that played wide receiver that are in the Hall of Fame, you can look up and down that list and go, hey, which one of you guys played defensive back in a year that your team went to the Super Bowl and you played you started three games at defensive back
in a playoff run? I don't
think
that should
factor
into his Hall of Fame candidacy.
Really? Because it's the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah, but still, he wasn't a Hall of Fame defensive back.
No, he wasn't, but he played football and he did exactly what needed to be done for that team to make the Super Bowl. He sacrificed himself as a wide receiver to go out for the betterment of the team and play defensive back. He's been a very good punt returner, kick returner. There's a lot of these guys that never once touched a punt return or a kick return that are in here. It's the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's not a positional Hall of Fame. When you look at some of his stats, you go, no, those don't match up. You know, touchdowns over his career, they don't match up. I think the lowest person for touchdowns as a wide receiver in the Hall of Fame is 51. He's at 30, and that's Lynn Swann. Now, here's the thing with Lynn Swann. Lynn Swann was never the best wide receiver in the NFL. Lynn Swann got into the friggin' Hall of Fame because of two catches in a Super Bowl. He made two amazing catches in the Super Bowl, and people threw him into the Hall of Fame basically because of that. They made him wait 15 years, but he wasn't a great wide receiver. Plus, he lined up opposite of John Stallworth, who was a better wide receiver than him. Julian Edelman is the second most effective and most potent offensive weapon on this team. He is a more effective and potent weapon for this team than Rob Gronkowski is, the guy everyone likes to say is the greatest tight end of all time. Julian Edelman's uncoverable. Julian Edelman just had 10 receptions for 141 yards in the Super Bowl. He was a Super Bowl MVP. You can quibble about that. The Patriots win the Super Bowl with Julian Edelman. When Julian Edelman's not there, they don't win the Super Bowl. They didn't win it last year when he wasn't available. But they won it the year before when he was available and Gronk wasn't.
Correct.
He is the second most important and effective offensive weapon on a dynastic team. In what friggin' world does that guy not make the Hall of Fame?
In this one.
Yeah, shouldn't be.
He is not going to make the Hall of Fame.
I don't think he will make the Hall of Fame. I think he should.
I don't think he even gets considered.
He absolutely will because of postseason performances. 100% he will be considered for Hall of Fame.
I don't think he gets considered.
He absolutely will, and someone will be there to make his case for him.
I agree.
I don't think he will get in. I don't think he will, but he will be considered.
I agree with your fire. I agree with your premise. I don't think he'll get considered. And I hate this. I hate that I'm going to say this. But I just think because of the fact that he has zero Pro Bowls and zero All-Pros.
Meaningless. I've seen players make an All-Pro team without making a Pro Bowl in the same year.
Yes.
That nullifies Pro Bowl.
To you, it does. But what about these voters, these obtuse voters? It's going to mean something to them, and I think they're going to blow it.
Well, hold on. You think they're going to blow it? You didn't think he'd even be considered? Do you really think they're going to blow it if they're not even going to get considered?
Well, that's what I'm saying. They're going to blow it by not even considering him. They're going to look at zero Pro Bowl. How do you put somebody in the Hall of Fame with zero Pro Bowl, zero All-Star games? They're never going to do it. They're not going to even talk about it.
They don't know what they're doing.
I'm with you there.
First of all, it took them how long to get Art Monk into the Hall of Fame, one of the best receivers of all time?
I don't know. Lynn Swann, he at least had, three Pro Bowls and three All-Pros. One first-team All-Pro. So there was something there. Four Pro Bowls, three Pro Bowls, something like that. Three?
Yeah, and you know what?
Three Pro Bowls.
People look at that dynasty of Pittsburgh, and they've put everybody in the Hall of Fame. But they're not going to do that with this Patriots team because there's a lot of hate for this Patriots team.
You're right. Julian Edelman, and this is where I agree, Julian Edelman was a significant piece of three championships, and I love what you said about they don't win the Super Bowl without him. They win without Gronk. How many guys played great last year? Now, they played great on offense last year, and they didn't win. So the argument, I guess, falls a little bit apart there. But this is a guy in three Super Bowls. In one, he was the MVP. In one, he caught the game-winning touchdown. In the other,
He could have been the MVP.
And in another, he had one of the greatest catches moments in the history of the Super Bowl with that epic catch that went off the guy's knee in the fourth quarter. This is the Pro Football Hall of Fame. This isn't the Lifetime Achievement Hall of Fame. This isn't the Stats Hall of Fame. This is the it's hard to tell the story of professional football without bringing up Julian Edelman. And it wasn't just one moment, Malcolm Butler, David Tyree. This is three Super Bowls now where he has been a significant piece, figure, reason that this Patriots dynasty has become a dynasty. And oh yeah, he was the Super Bowl in another one. If that doesn't get you a conversation, you should be stripped of everything that you've ever done in terms of voting for the Hall of Fame and go live in a cave.
Well, honestly, this is why players should select who goes into your contemporaries that actually played the game should select who goes into the Hall of Fame,
or at least have
and not
a
writers.
Voice. Yes,
because they're useless. They like to pretend like they watch every single game when it's no shot in hell do they watch every single game of every single week. They like to pretend, they like to put that out there like they're this expert, but they barely watch. They barely watch other teams. They look at number and then go, yeah, well, you know, he's a great running back because he had 1,000 yards rushing.
Yep.
Did you watch? Did you see what the impact that 1,000 yards actually had on the team or not? Because 1,000 yards can be different.
He's going to get marked down because I think Julian Edelman gets marked down because he plays with the Patriots, and you said there's a lot of hate for them. I think he gets marked down because he was a system receiver and he thrived because of the system. I think he gets marked down because he was white. I think it's all in play for Julian Edelman, and I don't think they even really
have. I don't
know
if he gets marked down because he's white. Let's keep in mind, most of these writers, white. Most of those guys that make up that room, that the Hall of Fame selection committee, most of them, white. So I don't think that plays against him.
Maybe not. But I feel like he doesn't maybe get the respect he has earned because of that.
He gets it from players.
He gets it from players.
Yeah, exactly.
You see it.
Listen to the other players
exactly.
talk about
and
him.
Not just in this Super Bowl.
And talk about how they can't cover him, yep. how they double team him, and he still gets open and racks up first down after first down after first down, and he, again, is the second most important offensive weapon in the second half of this dynasty. More important than the guy you think is the greatest of all time in his position. I'm sorry. I love Gronk. He's great. Edelman is more important to this team and how Tom Brady plays football.
Yeah.
Period. They can win with Edelman there and Gronk out. They can't win the big one without Edelman. They've proven it.
You're right.
It's not anecdotal. It's a fact.
Again, they were so good on offense last year in the Super Bowl. They should have been able to have enough offense to win that game without Edelman. But you're right.
Let me ask you this question. Who's better? Who's better? Julian Edelman or Wes Welker?
Julian Edelman.
Not even close
not even
to
close.
Me.
Yep.
It's not even close to me. Welker was very good.
Yeah.
He was very good at what he did. He lined up inside, and he could beat plenty of people with his quickness, and he was reliable.
Yeah. He was on the same page as Brady.
Occasionally did he have a big game-breaking play. Occasionally he did. Edelman is a far more versatile wide receiver. He's played as the number one option when Welker really wasn't. He really wasn't. He's the greatest check-down option of all time.
Yeah.
I'm looking to Moss. I know Welker's going to be open. I'm looking to Moss first. Okay. I'll check down to Welker. Because it's an easier throw, it makes more sense, and I'll rack up those 4 yards as opposed to maybe throw the ball out of bounds 20 yards down the field.
Julian Edelman was a much better athlete overall than Wes Welker. That was the difference. He had going into the NFL, now Julian Edelman wasn't invited to the combine.
Nope.
But he had, I think it was the shuttle drill, he had the best time in the shuttle drill, better than anybody at the combine. He had it at his Kent State Pro Day. This guy was elite athletically, especially in short spaces. So there's reasons why he's had the success he's had.
Listen, if you want to hold his PED suspension against him, I can't argue with it because it happened.
Yeah.
It happened. And there's been plenty of other guys who never got popped for PEDs who were great at what they did. But I've gotten into this argument with a couple of people and they're like, well, you know, Edelman's not a number one receiver like, you know, Terrell Owens. Okay, he's not. I mean, Owens is better. Owens is a great wide receiver, deservedly Hall of Fame. Shouldn't have even really have been a question. Okay, he's not like Randy Moss. You're right. Randy Moss is the most physical freak that's ever played that position. Most talented person that ever played that position. And then the other one they like to throw because they have time frame. He's not a number one like Ocho. Ocho doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame. Ocho Cinco doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame. Not even close. Not even close. Julian Edelman is a much better football player than Chad Johnson was. Julian Edelman is a much better football player than Wes Welker was. Again, the fact that this guy went and started 13 games in the regular season on defense in 2011, then played all three games starting on defense for a team that went to the Super Bowl and wasn't completely lost out there, wasn't such a albatross around your defense's neck, he was fine.
Yeah, no, he was there. He was playing.
If it was voted on by players, he'd get into the Hall of Fame.
He absolutely should be in a conversation. I would put, you know how postseason performance, what that means to me. I would probably put him in. I mean, this guy has been so good. And by the way, his regular season stats, it's not like there's nothing there. He's had 1,000 yards a few times. He's flirted with 1,000 yards. It's good.
He's had 2,000 yard seasons.
A million touchdowns.
One. No, I mean, that's fair. I mean, a lot of people hang that around him and go, only 30 touchdowns. Like I said, the lowest wide receiver with touchdowns in the Hall of Fame is Lynn Swann with 50, 51, something like that. And he did lead the league, I believe, once in touchdown receptions. But he was soft as butter. He wasn't a great football player. He was a nice little wide receiver, but again, the better one was lining up on the other side in John Stallworth.
I think a part of the reason he won't get in is because of, we've heard the argument before. I'm talking about the Tom Brady argument. Not is he the best, the GOAT. Is he the best football player of all time? And you've heard people make the argument before for other guys, Lawrence Taylor, Jerry Rice. Why? More athleticism to their game, and athletic prowess is a big part of being a football player. Mm-hmm. That's hurt Tom Brady in that, because they look at a guy that's not very fast, not very tall, or I'm sorry, not tall, not very fast, not very explosive, this and that. So this, how can this guy be the best football player of all time? He's not Jim Brown. I think that mentality hurts Edelman a little bit too, because he's not Julio Jones, but explosive, dynamic, even though he does have explosiveness in his own way.
See, to me, that should work in his favor because he's a better football player than these guys.
I know.
The versatility he brings, the fact that he can do other things that these other wide receivers couldn't and wouldn't do, and successfully.
I know. I'm just telling you, people are going to factor that in, that they don't have the video of him running past everyone and over everyone like Moss, or jumping over everybody, or running through people like T.O. It's not his game. And he'll get punished for that, penalized. It's not right, but that's what's going to happen. He doesn't have the optics, and optics mean something. All right, we'll be back. This is the Mark and Kitchen Show.
We now return to Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
You know, I just can't say enough about our football team. Certainly, Julian epitomizes the work ethic, toughness, mental toughness, physical toughness, determination, will, and I'd say just extraordinary ability to perform under pressure. We have so many guys that do that well, do it in so many different ways. And, you know, I think back to Julian's first year, and the question was asked about him playing receiver and returning punts. He played corner for us too. So he's truly in the mold of, you know, one of the great versatile Patriots, Troy Brown, Mike Vrabel, guys like that that have done that for us through the years.
Okay, so that's Bill Belichick talking about Julian Edelman. We were just talking about Edelman's Hall of Fame candidacy, or if there could be a case for Julian Edelman to get into the Hall of Fame one day. 401-737-1287 is the phone number. Maddie, do me a favor. Re-rack the sound of Bill right there where he's listing off all of Edelman's positive qualities right at kind of the beginning of that clip.
I just can't say enough about our football team. Certainly, Julian epitomizes the work ethic, toughness, mental toughness, physical toughness, determination, will, and I'd say just extraordinary ability to perform under pressure. We have so many guys that...
All right, cut it off. Did you hear what he just said right there? How important were those qualities to the Patriots, not just this year, but throughout this run of Super Bowls in this back half of the dynasty? How important? So important. But nothing that Bill just outlined right there, nothing gets you into the Hall of Fame. That's the problem. Because Edelman is so elite at all of those things that have been so vitally important. But no, we'd rather talk about meaningless Pro Bowls and all pros when you make all pro but don't make Pro Bowl. Like, what a joke.
How does that make sense?
This is the Pro Football Hall of Fame. That's what a football player is all about. And he's not going to get consideration despite being elite at all of those things that Bill just mentioned. And it's a shame he gets overlooked because he doesn't have a Pro Bowl to go down to Florida or Hawaii and play adult grab ass at recess football.
Yeah. Yeah. The one thing I do still appreciate about the Pro Football Hall of Fame as opposed to the Baseball Hall of Fame is the exclusivity is still somewhat right there with football.
Mike Mussina is not
Hall
getting
fame
into the football.
No, guys like Mike Mussina aren't. And, you know, baseball's been so watered down that it's just wholly uninteresting anymore. This is why at least the Football Hall of Fame is still somewhat interesting, because you can have these arguments. Now with baseball, you're like, well, they let that friggin' guy in.
Harold Baines.
Maybe this. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh. But as I was looking through the during the commercial break, there's only like 17 wide receivers in the Professional Football Hall of Fame. That's it. I thought there would be more. I thought there was going to be like 30 wide receivers in the Hall of Fame, which would help make Edelman's case. But since it's been so exclusive, that works against him. But again, I keep going back to someone like friggin' Lynn Swann.
Yeah, but can I just be clear here? I want to be crystal clear about this. I'm not talking about – I'm not necessarily even saying Edelman should get in. I'm saying he should be in the conversation. And
agreed.
I don't think they're going to have a conversation. That's what I think. And I think that's a crime. Now, whether – hey, he's not getting in anyway. What does it matter? He should at least have enough respect around that room to have a conversation. Ty Law had a much more impressive resume than Champ Bailey. Champ Bailey went right in. Why? Because he was he probably went in because – you remember a guy named Nnamdi Asamoah?
Yes.
Okay. For a few years there, for a year, whatever it was, he was sort of
– Kerry Washington.
He was viewed as one of the best corners in the league. I remember when he was on the trading block, the Jets were going to get him. There was going to be Asamoah and Revis. And it was, no, he sucked. He was – he just – he kind of fell into a situation or an identity where he was a much better player than he actually was, and he wasn't that good. But, oh, because of that reputation, he was a first-team All-Pro twice, added that to his resume, and he was viewed as the best corner in the league. I think Champ Bailey had a little bit of that going for him, where he's probably a little bit more highly regarded than he actually needed to
well,
be.
Well, you see, the problem with the Ty Law Champ Bailey thing is what works in Champ's favor and works against Ty is the time in which they played. Champ, for a couple of years there, was considered, and I didn't necessarily agree with it, but was considered the best cornerback in the league. Ty comes into the league in 95, and he's still got, you know, you've got Deion Sanders as that guy in the league that everyone, he's the best cornerback in the league.
Yeah, he wasn't Deion Sanders.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't even close. Deion was special in its own different way. But Ty Law was a better football player than Champ Bailey was.
Let me ask you this question. I was thinking about this after the game. What we saw from Stephon Gilmore, I concluded, what Stephon Gilmore put forth during his time with the Patriots, next to Ty Law, so it's Ty Law 1, I put Stephon Gilmore 2. I put him above Malcolm Butler. I put him above Darrell Revis in that championship season. I think Gilmore has, overall, the body of work, outperformed either of those guys. What do you think?
I'll take him over Malcolm Butler. That one's easy.
Yep.
That one's easy.
Yeah, the one big play, he was a second-team All-Pro. But outside of that big play in the Seahawks Super Bowl, what do you remember from Malcolm Butler?
I do remember having a decent season the next year.
He did.
Decent season. Wasn't as good as
he was an All-Pro
either of the seasons that we had mentioned with Gilmore this year or Revis in 11, but – or 14. Whatever it was.
14.
I don't know. I'm split. I would hedge slightly towards Gilmore.
Yeah. I think it's an easy decision. Darrell Revis had a good year. I forget what awards he was given that year. He had a good year. But what do you remember about Darrell Revis? What plays do you remember him making?
Well, don't forget. See, people forget this sometimes when it comes to cornerbacks.
Yeah.
You might not make a lot of huge plays in your career. Why? Because they're so afraid of you, they're not throwing your way.
Sure, but there was some of that with Gilmore, I think, this year.
There was.
Yeah.
There absolutely was. But there wasn't with Malcolm Butler. Still going at him.
No. But when Gilmore was challenged, he stepped up.
Absolutely.
So I think there was some Revis. There were stretches of this season where I said, yeah, I haven't heard much of Gilmore. That's a good thing.
It's splitting hairs. Either one you choose, you can make an absolutely viable argument for either one of them.
I think when you factor in, here's my problem with Darrell Revis. I think of a couple things specifically. I think of the Super Bowl, because he didn't really do much against the Seahawks. Remember, he was in coverage when Doug Baldwin scored that touchdown and then took a crap on the ball that they didn't show. That was Revis. He didn't really do much in that game. He had the interception in the AFC Championship game, but that was a garbage time interception. And then I remember Darrell Revis, did he give up not one, but two touchdowns to Steve Smith, old man Steve Smith Sr. on the Ravens in the divisional round? I think he did. He at least one. And I think he might have given up two touchdowns when he was manned up against Steve Smith and the Patriots had to dig themselves out of huge holes twice in that game. That's what I remember most about Darrell Revis, getting burned by Steve Smith twice and not really doing much in the Super Bowl and then having Doug Baldwin catch the touchdown on you and then take a dump on you.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the stats, it's an incredibly similar season. They both had two picks in their respective years. Both defended, you know, 15 to 20 passes, made the same amount of tackles. Like, it's almost the same exact
stats,
season.
But I just, when I look at how Gilmore played and how he didn't give up certain plays, I mean, the stats on there aren't going to outline when this guy caught a big pass over you.
No, but it helps you for the entire picture. Yeah.
Gilmore was really good. Other than, was he at fault in that Chargers game when Keenan Allen went running free? I forget if that was him. Other than that play, he was awesome in nails in the Chiefs game. He was awesome in the Super Bowl. Obviously, he could have been the MVP. He had the interception in the Super Bowl. You want to talk about moments? Interception in the Super Bowl. He had the big, you remember at the end of the AFC Championship game against the Jaguars? He had the big, he was diving tonight. That was a big play in that game, sort of sealed that win. I think overall it goes Ty Law, it goes Stephon Gilmore, then it goes Revis and Butler, probably Revis then Butler. That's my power rankings.
I would probably hedge towards Gilmore simply because when you look at the pieces surrounding them on that defense, I think Revis had a little bit more to play. He had Browner on the other side, who wasn't great, but people still didn't love throwing at him.
Right.
I think you didn't have that with this defense. It wasn't quite the same. I think overall this defense was better, but when you look at that secondary unit, 14 was probably a better unit.
Definitely. Revis was a first-team All-Pro in 2014. Gilmore was a first-team All-Pro. I just think the big thing with Revis was the playoff performance. Getting burned by Steve Smith and then in the Super Bowl. Didn't do anything in the Super Bowl. They avoided him. They didn't go his way. He let up that touchdown on Doug Baldwin, and he just didn't really do anything that made me realize that his presence was there in a positive way. That's why I go with Gilmore.
Yeah, but don't forget, Gilmore's interception in the Super Bowl was not necessarily, wasn't a product of Gilmore making a great play.
Sure, sure.
It was a product of Goff being Jared Goff.
Yeah.
You know, that's really, and the defensive line had more impact on that interception than Gilmore did.
Sure. And by the way, I haven't dissected through my thoughts, how did Gilmore play against the Eagles? Because nobody was good there. I'm sure there were some ugly plays in that game too. I don't remember him giving up a touchdown specifically. Off the top of my head.
I'm sure everyone gave up a
touchdown
in that game.
Nobody could tackle in that game. So I would go with Gilmore.
Jesus Christ, Nick Foles had a touchdown reception.
I would go with Gilmore. It's close. I would go with Gilmore. All right, when we get back, we got more Celtics to talk about. I still want to go into the Super Bowl and what I think was the biggest downfall for the Rams. More, do you want to get into spring training starts this week? You want to talk about the Red Sox? Okay. This is the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEI.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.